Hi everyone, my name is Sydney Chandra-Renee and I'm the host of Perfect Timing. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month and I thought it would be nice to close out the month to talk about it. I'll be speaking with a breast cancer survivor who was diagnosed with cancer just after finding out she was pregnant. I brought her on today to share her story and to discuss the impact it has on a woman's life. Her name is Alicia Saunders. Hi Alicia, welcome to the pod.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I'm excited for this experience.
Yes, thank you so much for joining me. Alicia was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2013 while pregnant with her first child. She fought to keep her baby and to beat the disease. Now living as a proud 4-year-old mother of three and residing in Virginia, she continues to share her story and being an advocate for breast cancer. Wow, that's honestly just eye-opening for me, just reading your bio and seeing that you were diagnosed with cancer and carrying your first daughter at the same time. How did that feel for you?
It was overwhelming. It was scary, but I'm pretty much a determined person. Some people can say I'm stubborn. So when I first found out, and it was just like a roller coaster of emotions, I was just determined to meet with as many doctors possible, you know, educate myself, and then figure out the best decision for me and my baby.
Definitely. And, you know, you being a mom, that's how you would have wanted to have it as well. And didn't they want to terminate your daughter before they wanted to do aggressive treatment?
Yeah, they did. So when I was first diagnosed, I was actually referred to the emergency room by the OBGYN who had confirmed the pregnancy. He thought that it was probably just a lump in my right breast, so he just wanted me to go get it checked out. And when I went and had the biopsy done, at the time the ER doctor pulled me to the side and she was like, you know, we're going to wait for the final results, but I've been doing this a long time and I'm pretty sure that it's cancer. But we'll be, you know, following up with you. So about a week later, that's when I got the call, while I was at work, actually. I got the call that it was positive for what a form of cancer, breast cancer, called invasive ductal carcinoma. And that type of cancer, it sits within the tumor. And so that's why it's called, it's sitting in ductal carcinoma within it. So I ended up being referred to an oncologist. That's the doctor that typically deals with the treatment for breast cancer. I was referred to him, and upon the first meeting, because I didn't have any family history, because they weren't certain of the stage of the cancer, he felt that we needed to be aggressive with treating it, and he told me that it was no other choice but for me to terminate my pregnancy as soon as possible.
Wow, that must have been really hard to hear. And, you know, carrying your daughter, it must have been kind of fearful for you.
Yeah, it was. It was very scary. I mean, because, of course, you know, I had my family there with me, and their main concern was about saving me. So, you know, they wanted me to do what the doctor had suggested to make sure that we could get the treatment started, but something in my gut just told me to, you know, get another opinion, meet with other doctors, and just see if there's a consensus among it. I wasn't told that it was aggressive, that I needed to begin treatment right away, so I felt I had enough time for me to be able to go and meet with other doctors to see what the best treatment plan was. And it ended up working in my favor by me following my gut.
Wow. And as you said your family wanted you to save yourself rather than your daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's understandable. I mean, I'm my parents, you know, oldest daughter, they were just concerned about, you know, you're 33, you're still pretty young. You could possibly have more children, but I was determined that I wasn't going to allow one doctor to, you know, map out my future. So what ended up happening was the ER doctor that I spoke to that had first told me that she had been doing it a long time and she thought it was cancer, she ended up referring me to a breast surgeon. And I met with my breast surgeon, and what's so crazy about the experience is my breast surgeon had just came back from a medical conference in Houston, Texas, or maybe Dallas, I can't recall. He had just came back from a medical conference in Texas, and he had learned about this new test for what do you call it? It's like what they call a genomic test. What it is that they can biopsy your tumor and then they send it off to a lab and they can end up looking at the genes of the tumor to find out what it's made up of and how aggressive it is. So he asked if he could be given the opportunity to send off the tissue of my tumor to find out how aggressive it is and what the treatment plan would be before I opted to just go ahead and terminate my pregnancy.
Wow, that almost have been kind of a shock to you, and for you to be able to say no to the first answer that you got and be able to fight for your daughter. I'm wondering, how did you get the strength to really say, I want to care, I want to help us both, and I want to have my daughter and survive this disease? What made you want to keep going?
Well, it was because, I felt like I was at a great place. I had, graduated college. I had did my undergrad, did my master's. I was well into my career, and I just felt like it was the time that I really wanted to settle down and with becoming a mom. It was always a long term, I wanted to be a mother. I have two brothers and a sister. I'm the big sister, so I always wanted to be a mom, and it was as if I just didn't feel that someone else could tell me yes or no, you will get to experience this. Like I said at the beginning of this interview, I'm pretty strong-willed. Some people may say I'm stubborn or hard-headed, depends on who you ask, but I just knew within myself that I wasn't going to allow one person to determine my fate. And I'm big on doing my research, doing my due diligence, speaking to others. And that's why I felt before I made an informed decision, I needed to meet with other doctors and find out if they felt the exact same way as the first doctor.
That's really inspiring, and your stubbornness that you said others would say that you have, or your persistence that you have, really is the reason why both you and your daughter and your two other kids are here today, and it's really inspiring to see that.
Thank you. So what it was that the treatment plan that the first doctor had prescribed for me was going to be, of course, first terminating the pregnancy, second, starting chemotherapy, which is a form of drugs that are entered that are given to you through your veins. So you would have to have surgery, have what they call a chemo port put in. And then you would go to the sessions where they will hook you up to a machine and the medicines would go through your body. But one of the side effects of chemotherapy can affect your fertility. It can affect, the ability for you to have children in the future. And so that was a huge concern of mine because, of course, when he gave me the drugs that he wanted to administer, I went and did my research, and a lot of women did speak to once they had those drugs, there was a concern with them being able to bear children in the future. And that just stood out to me because even if I had opted to listen to him and terminate my pregnancy, there was no guarantee that I could have children in the future. But as I said about my breast surgeon, once we got the test results back that he sent off to that lab I was speaking of with that genomic testing, they ended up finding out that chemotherapy would have hurt me more than it would have helped me, and that all I needed to have done was have the tumor removed. Then after I had my daughter, I would start a form of radiation where it just focuses straight on the breast where the tumor was located. And then I would just take have this form of hormonal therapy, which is a form of a pill. I would take that 5 to 10 years after. And none of those options would affect me having the ability to bear children in the future. So that kind of explains why, yes, I was able to have my daughter, my 6-year-old now, Julia, and then I ended up having her 2 siblings later on. So it ended up, working in my favor with me wanting to be a mother.
Absolutely. And, I'm only 15 years old. I'm not too sure like what really happens to the body once you discover that you have something like breast cancer. So could you explain to me and the listeners what breast cancer really does to the body?
Yeah, so it all depends on what form of breast cancer you have and also the stage. So I can mainly speak to mine because it's such a wide array of the types of breast cancer and the stages and how it affects the body. But some forms of cancer, when you have breast cancer, I'm fortunate that the cancer that I had stayed within that tumor. So, like I explained, once they removed the tumor, that in essence removed the cancer because my cancer hadn't spread to the lymph nodes in my body. And if you want to understand what the lymph nodes are, they pretty much call lymph nodes the highway of the body. So it's like roads running within your body. So if it had got into my lymph nodes, it could have spread it elsewhere. So there are forms of cancer where when it becomes inflammatory, it can get into your lymph nodes and it can travel into other areas of your body, which they end up calling metastatic breast cancer. Metastatic is a form that can spread sometimes to people's neck, their, lungs, stomach, anywhere because it has traveled through the lymph nodes. So, like I said, speaking to my own, thankfully, with the type of cancer I had, it mainly was just kind of pain in that area where the cancer was located. It was hard. You could feel the tumor. You could actually kind of move it around. And that was pretty much the only symptoms that I had. I was very blessed, very fortunate that I had a lower stage and that mine was only contained in there.
Wow, just hearing this makes me wonder about all the times that women have to go through this, and it's not an easy process, obviously. Breast cancer and cancer itself isn't something to mess around with. It's really your life, and as you said, like once it gets into the lymph nodes, it makes you much more sick, and I can imagine such it might be such a crazy experience and feeling to have that you are your body is someplace where a tumor exists, and you're just trying to survive and trying to take all the precautions we can to make sure that you can still be here.
Yeah, and you know what? Even though the tumor itself, when I had it, when it was located in my body, didn't affect me, what can also be just as affecting is the medicine. So, and the treatment options. So, like I spoke to, my treatment options were I had surgery, so of course that caused pain. I had surgery actually during the second trimester. So once I was 14 weeks pregnant, I had surgery to remove the tumor. So of course, the side effects of the surgery is I had to go into anesthesia, I had to have the tumor cut out, come home, heal, all of that. Once I had my daughter, I had to then begin the medicine. Well, the side effects of the medicine can be pretty rough too, from me not being able to sleep, from you being happy one moment, sad another, the mood swings of it all. Sometimes you're sitting there and it's freezing, then next thing you know, you're hot, so you could have the hot flashes. It makes your brain really foggy. So, I'm having a new baby and my brain is foggy with trying to remember things, trying to sleep, all of that. So that was the side effects of the medication. And then when I had the radiation, that is a whole nother, effect within itself. I can't speak to how strong the beam is, but it goes straight to the tissue and it ends up burning over time. It makes your skin turn darker and it makes your skin peel kind of like similar to sunburn, but much worse. it made my skin start to peel like an onion, and it hurt to the touch, you know, and you had to make sure you use the right creams and all of that. So, you know, you have the recovery from surgery plus the medication with all of those effects, and then the radiation effects. So although the cancer itself may not have caused a huge effect on my body at the time, the treatments that I had after were just as bad.
Wow, that all must have been really hard for you to take, and for you being pregnant and then having those medications on top of it. I can only imagine that it could only make it that much scarier to carry a baby. And I'm really excited to have you on today because I want the other women and people listening today to hear what it's like and to say, like, breast cancer is not just something that women go through. It's not something that should be really seen as just a disease. It's something that really happens to women. And in your case, you were pregnant while it was going on. And I'm really excited to have you on because sharing your story opens the eyes of not only myself, but my listeners to see what it's truly like. And I want to go into what causes it and what you have advice for women right after this break.
Hey, business owners, entrepreneurs, professionals, are you using the right tools for your business? Is your business well enough to go the distance? Hey, I'm Coach Harvey, and I'm a wellness coach, small business strategist. I show you how to use wellness as a business tool to get more clients for your business, no matter your industry. I use big company strategies on a small business budget. Hey, go over and join my email list. Go to coachharvey.now.site. Get the free ebook, 20 things to do immediately to keep you and your business healthy during these challenging times. Also, don't forget to check out my podcast every Tuesday at 4 p.m. The Healthy Side of Business. Don't miss it. See you Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Stay safe and be well.
This is Sydney Trailer-Lone, and I'm so excited to share with you my international podcast, Perfect Timing, that will be broadcast on Mondays at 2 p.m. through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and so much more. We will have outstanding guests that will talk about their passions, goals, and dreams. Make sure you tune in and have a seat at the table where we will create a voice for us every Monday at 2 p.m. This is Sydney Collins of Perfect Timing. Welcome back, everyone. Again, I'm here with breast cancer survivor Alicia Saunders, and we're just talking about what breast cancer really is and how it has an effect on the body. So, Alicia, what really causes breast cancer?
So, it could be a multitude of things. Like I said, I can mainly speak to my experience, but for my breast cancer, it was hormonal and environmental. I don't have any family history, so I can't trace it back like some people who may be diagnosed, you know, their mother or a sister, grandmother, aunt, someone in their family could have possibly had it, and it could be hereditary for them. But for myself, that wasn't the case. Mine was considered to be hormonal and estrogen positive. From the estrogen hormone, my body overproduced that one and caused, I guess, it to feed the cancer, and then also environmental. And when I first heard environmental, I was like, wait, what do you mean? Like, is it the water I'm drinking? Is it the food? Have I been in front of the microwave too long? Like, what do you mean by environmental? But there's really no definitive answer because it's all of the things. It could be additives in the food. It could be, you know, things that we've been exposed to. It could have been prior medications that I had taken that caused, you know, a chemical imbalance in my body. There's just no defined answer. So breast cancer could be caused by many ways, but for me specifically, it was the hormones as well as the environment that we live in.
Wow, that must be really scary to hear as, like, okay, well, I have this cancer. Where is it coming from? And for there to be no really definitive answer, it must be really shocking to hear.
Yeah, it was, because it's like, you know, I'm hearing this news, and the first thing you want to know is, well, where did this come from? Well, how did this happen to me? And to not really be given a defined answer outside of, oh, well, your body, you know, hormones may have been an overdrive, but otherwise it's, you know, just something in the environment. It could have been, you know, some pills you took when you were younger. It could have been some foods you had eaten that may have had too much estrogen. And speaking of foods that had too much estrogen, because of the fact that my cancer was estrogen positive, I can't have foods that have forms of estrogen in them. Mainly, I can't have soy products. So I can't, you know, drink soy milk. I can't eat edamame, which are soybeans. Anything with a soy additive in it, I can no longer have, because I'm not certain what effect it would have on my body, you know, with possibly a chance of the cancer returning in the future.
Wow, there's so many factors there. And for it not to be just one distinct reason as to why and where it came from, it must be really difficult to hear. And how did you stay true to who you are while you were going through this?
So like I said, anyone who knows me, they know that I'm big on advocacy. I'm big on my beliefs. I'm big on believing in myself, you know, as well as others. But it's just that I didn't want to compromise who I was by letting go of that factor of control, the control that I could have on my own future, the control that I have on my life, you know, in the present when it happened. I just felt that I needed to stand strong. And then also, you know, of course, I prayed about it and stood on that, shared it with my mother, my aunt, had a prayer circle, and just stood on that faith as well as my breast surgeon. Very God-fearing. He's very spiritual. He, too, is big on family. And, you know, all in all, that's what I did. I had to stand on my beliefs, belief within myself, belief within a higher being, and just pray for the best. And that's what I did.
Absolutely. And then look where you are now.
I know. That's what I was going to say. And look where I am now. It's amazing. No matter how many interviews I do, and I'm super excited to be doing this interview, you know, with the younger generation, but no matter how many interviews I do, I'm still amazed at where I am. I recently was sharing with some people that I have what they have called a form of survivor's guilt. Not necessarily that I'm still here living and being able to testify, but that when I'm sharing my story, I know that everyone doesn't have a happy ending. You know, I've met a lot of breast cancer patients through my time, and it's kind of hard for me to speak to and share all the great things that happened with my experience, knowing that that may not be the case with others. But then my breast surgeon, I shared that with him, and he just, you know, humbled me and told me, no, keep sharing, keep talking about it, keep giving interviews, you know, speak to the younger generation, the older generation, because you can still give hope. Even if their story is not the same as yours, the sheer fact that you stood on your beliefs, you know, you did your research, you believed in yourself, look at where it has gotten you, and you can hopefully inspire them to do the same and not give up if they ever receive the diagnosis of breast cancer.
Definitely. And yeah, continue to share your story, because I'm learning, and I hope that my listeners are learning as well, because I am, again, I'm only 15. I only know so much about breast cancer or cancer alone, and to be learning this so at such a young age, it prepares me for, you know, my adulthood. And even, you know, I'm not going to say that I would catch it, you know, but I feel that I am better prepared having you on today.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, because that's another thing is, you know, I don't want the younger listeners to just not think that they are totally immune. We can't predict our future. And my thing is to inform those so that if something were to occur in the future, they could reflect back and say, hey, I remember that time I listened to you know, that interview on her podcast, and this is what the young lady shared. Because with the world that we live in and with the unpredictable environment, they've actually been finding that people are being diagnosed younger and younger. A lot of people always associate cancer with being an old folks disease, and that's not the case. I mean, 33 wasn't super young, but 33 also wasn't old when I was diagnosed. And so typically they recommend that young women start getting their mammograms, which is the breast exam, for them to be able to, you know, make sure and hopefully prevent the cancer. They recommend that you start getting them at 40. Well, now because people are being diagnosed younger, some people are having family history, there are those who are getting their mammograms as young as in their 20s. Well, in your 20s, that's still college years. You know, depending on where you're at, you could be in undergrad or you could be in grad school. Like, for instance, my daughters, because I was diagnosed at such a young age, my daughters now have to start having their mammograms at the age of 25. At 25, you should be living your best life. You have, you know, if you choose to go to college, you've possibly graduated, you're preparing to tackle the world with your career, you know, you're traveling, having fun with your friends, just doing everything. And you then have to also carry the responsibility of breast exams and going to have, you know, the mammograms done just to ensure that because someone in your family had it, that you're also not going to battle that same disease. So it's kind of a reality check that no one is immune and there is no set age where this could affect someone. So I just want people to make sure they keep that in mind, is to try to stay as healthy as possible and just, you know, even starting young, get your yearly physical, try to take care of yourself, stay active, you know, just pay attention to your body because your body will tell you when there's something wrong.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. And for you to be on today, teaching me and my listeners, I really think that we are better prepared for that. And I was just about to get into, you know, the mammograms and things, such things like that. So when do you think you should begin screening for breast cancer?
So that's a great question. Like I said, with the cancer community, they typically recommend that for mammograms, they begin at the age of 40. And I think that may be also what insurance companies also suggest. But if you have a family history of it, or if you're having any ailments, I suggest, and I think also if you were to meet with a doctor, you could start having mammograms early. My personal opinion is probably starting at 30. That's just how I feel based on what I've gone through. Had I have started having those exams earlier, I believe that I probably could have caught it sooner. But, you know, that's just my opinion on it. But I do believe that people should do their due diligence and see when they are able to start getting tested for it.
Definitely. And for you to be here and talking about it, I really think that's truly powerful. And for other young women to hear this, I really think that it's prominent, especially right now, being October Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I really think that it's powerful for you to be on here sharing your story.
I appreciate it. It means a lot. You know, I look at these children and I they don't know the story that I've encountered. I try to share it, you know, with my six-year-old and help her gain an understanding of how hard I fought to get her here. And, you know, I know they're too young to really comprehend, but I know in due time they will appreciate it. And that's also another reason why I continue to share, because I want them to know how proud I am, you know, as to where I am today and how I advocate for myself and I advocate for others. You know, I make myself a resource now. Even though I do these interviews, I'm pretty much an open book. When I do them, sometimes people may read about me. They may hear an interview on the news. And I've had actually strangers reach out to me. They've reached out to me and said, hey, this is what I'm going through. Is it possible you could give me some advice? You know, so I know that when it all first happened and I really, you know, was overcome with emotions and just broke down and I kept saying, why not, why me? But now that I reflect on it and I'm having the opportunity to speak to people, you know, like doing this podcast right now, it made me realize, well, why not me?
Definitely. And yeah, I agree. You just continue to share your story. I'm learning. I hope my listeners are learning. And it's just a real process that it's not the same for everyone. And yours is so unique and special that it just has to be shared. And I'm curious, like, I'm sure that your daughters know that you've gone through this. And have you told them about it? Have you really told them your story and how you went about it? And I want to know, like, what their reaction was.
Well, so my youngest two, they don't really understand. I have a son who is 10. We have a son that's 10 months, and then our daughter will be 2 next month. But my six-year-old, she understands a little bit. For instance, her dad showed her an interview that I had did last year, and she started crying. She didn't really grasp it, but I guess she saw me crying in the interview, and then she saw the hospital picture with us first having it, and she saw the picture with me going into surgery, and she started crying and saying, why was mommy sick? And then, you know, we used that to foster a conversation at her age with helping her understand that, you know, mommy had cancer when mommy found out she was pregnant with you, and mommy didn't want to lose you, so this is what mommy did, and look at where you are now. So it was kind of, you know, bittersweet because she was upset, but then by the time we really explained my whole journey, it made her proud that mommy did the right thing because now mommy has her, you know, daughter Julia.
Oh, that's really touching. And, you know, I know they're young and they can only grasp so much about the situation, but for her to understand that you went through that is really touching, and for her to be supportive and be like, my mom beat cancer and I'm going to keep standing up for her and standing up for other women with breast cancer is really inspiring, and it's really sweet to see. And again, she's really young, but just to see that is just really, really nice.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I have another question about the process of breast cancer. What is it like if someone who's diagnosed with breast cancer, what is it like for them if they don't want the treatment? Because I have seen articles or videos of women who don't want to receive the treatment. So what happens then?
Yeah. And, you know, it's the timing of you asking me that question, because I had someone actually reach out to me recently who has been diagnosed but is fearful of the effects of treatment on their body, and so they wish to try to not have, you know, medical treatment and possibly try to heal themselves, you know, by taking herbs or vitamins and then, you know, doing other non-traditional approaches to healing themselves. I can only speak for myself in regards to that's a tough choice. And the reason I say that is because I'm such an advocate for medical treatment because I know how it served me. And when I say medical treatment, I don't necessarily mean that you have to just immediately partake in all the drugs and all the, you know, chemo options that are presented to you, but because of the medical testing by, you know, the doctors that help determine what would help me, I advocate for that. So I tell them, if nothing else, if you haven't decided that you wanted to do traditional treatment, find out from your doctor if you have the option of them dissecting what your cancer is made up of, and then finding out what treatment would help you. Let them give you your options and then make an informed decision from there. But what I don't want them to do is just not listen at all and just disregard the medical community and only try to beat it themselves, because cancer is serious. You know, cancer can be a deadly disease. It eats away at your body. And, you know, these medical parameters are put in place for a reason. And I just want them to at least consult with someone, talk to them, and then make an informed decision based upon those conversations.
Yes, I agree. And as you were saying earlier, you're happy that you said that you didn't take the first no as an answer. So what do you say about getting a second opinion or trying to see other doctors and consultants about it?
I say that if that's what you feel, you should do it. You're not committed to one physician. You have that option and you have that power to speak to others. In my situation, I met with the first oncologist. He gave me his plan. I met with my breast surgeon. He gave me his plan. I then went to Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland, and I met with a team of 8 doctors. They read on my file. They did the testing. They sat down, and they discussed my cancer, and they came to a consensus on what they felt was the best treatment. So all in all, I had 10 doctors that I leaned on to tell me what they felt should be the best treatment. So if I was able to consult with that many, then I'm huge and I advocate. If you feel like you need to get a second opinion, it is well within your right to do so.
Wow, and you're such a prime example for that because you, as you said, you had about 10 doctors that you were leaning on to help save you and your daughter, and I really think that you being such a strong advocate for medicine and just getting well within the best parameters, I really think it's really nice to see, and I'm just really glad that you're here talking about that.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, that is usually my message to people is you have to be your biggest advocate. Yes, we have the doctors, you know, that is what they do. That is their specialty, but the only person that's going to advocate for you is you. So do what you feel you need to do to help you make the best informed decision for your own future.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't think you would be the only person to do this. I mean, my mom, when she was carrying me, it was a struggle. Though she didn't have breast cancer, she still fought for my life in the same way that you fought for your daughter's. And I really think that there's other women out there that can relate to this as well. And for you just to be a strong advocate here today is just really nice to see.
Thank you. That means so much. I really appreciate it. I'm so thankful, you know, that you, being a voice for the younger community, took interest in this topic with informing them. It just speaks highly of the character of yourself, and I'm so honored that you all reached out to me to be on this podcast.
Thank you so much. It means a lot, and hearing that only makes me want to continue. And, you know, I'm not only doing this for the youth in my community. I really think that I'm learning myself and to use my platform and to have it here for others to hear things such as this story. It's just crazy that I'm able to do that and share this with everyone. And it's something that I'm really proud of. And having people like you here today just only makes me want to continue.
And that you should. I'm here to support in any way possible. You know, if those who are listening reach out to you and want to learn more information, don't hesitate to pass along my information. I am an advocate. I am a voice of reason. I also, you know, I volunteer to serve as a breast cancer hotline operator. I'm also a patient ambassador for the medical company that did my testing for my cancer. So I'm always available to speak to others, you know, if they want more information, if they just want someone to lean on, you know, I'm here. So please make sure you share that if anyone were to reach out to you, you know, after they hear this cast.
Absolutely. I was just about to say, like, share with our listeners how they can reach you, but you took it for me anyway. But, you know, yeah, as you guys heard her, if you have any more questions, feel free to contact her or contact myself so I can give you her information so you guys can really discuss that. And, you know, I'm really glad I was able to have you on today, Alicia.
I'm so happy to be here. If you can only see me smiling over here. It means a lot. I mean, it really does. I so appreciate it because at your age, you don't think that people really pay attention to what's going on with the older community when it comes to cancer and those type of ailments. And it just, it means a lot to know that you want to educate your listeners of all ages during Breast Cancer Awareness Month with sharing these things and just giving them more information so they can be informed for their future. I mean, even if I pray that, you know, no one else has to go through that journey, but if someone in their family or friend or anyone that they may come in contact with is has the same story that I have, then maybe they could help give that support because they've learned a little bit more based upon the conversation that you and I have had today.
Thank you so much, Alicia, for joining me today.
You're so welcome. Thank you again for having me. And, yeah, if you ever want to chat again in the future, I'm available.
Absolutely. I feel like I've learned so much, and I hope my listeners have as well. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Perfect Timing Podcast. Make sure you join us every Monday at 2 p.m. through SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or Elite Conversations. And you can also find us on our Instagram, Perfect Timing Podcast. Thank you guys for listening.